Welcome to La Liga Weekly. We delayed the podcast this week to include Sevilla's game because they're definitely in the title race now. And in a few weeks' time, they'll go to Dortmund, restore Spanish pride, and the last bit's not happening, is it? In fact, the good name of Spanish football rests on an out-of-form Atleti playing a home match in Budapest and 11 fit Real Madrid players supplemented by a geezer who can't get a game for Getafe. But to be honest, it's always been about the league for me. Who cares about the Champions League? Most of the teams aren't champions in it anyway. And we do have a league, all because it turns out you can push a goalkeeper in the penalty area and get away with it after all. Makes sense in a minute. Exciting times for Barcelona, we can all agree. I mean, there's the centre-back lucky dip of disaster. Who will mess it up this week? It's a wide open field. And they've been named as the top money makers in world football. Okay, it's for the year that included fans at the Camp Nou. And it's long been spent and disappeared down the drain with my lockdown fitness plan. But one of the presidential hopefuls reckons he's got investment. So Mbappe and or, and maybe both, of Haaland and Mbappe will be joining next year. I think we need a fact checker on this one, or maybe a health warning. Bullshit is bad for your wealth. We'll look at all of the games and Jose Luis Mendilibar's recognition that footballers dive too much, Terry. After 923 games as a coach and over 500 as a player, he now notices. Next week, he reveals that football agents don't always have the best interests of everybody else at heart. I think we'll do a shirt giveaway? If Barcelona sign Mbappe and Haaland this summer, we'll give everybody a free shirt with their names on it. Are you confident we can... Yeah, we'll tell you what, we'll promise it with no intention of ever bringing it to fruition, because that will make us popular. We do have some questions. So where do we start? Shall we start with the general title race? Shall we do that? Because Atleti messed up again. They can't play against Levante, can they? They've got this blind spot against them, so they messed up again. Exciting game, frustrating game for Atleti, and then Real Madrid, one way or another, take advantage. Sevilla take advantage. Actually, a pretty good performance tonight against Osasuna.
Yes.
Barcelona managed to mess it up against Cadiz. So let's go back to Atleti, shall we? And when was it we were talking? Friday, and we were saying that, you know, they're not bottling it. He's doing all right. He's fine. He's fine. He's fine. It's fine. Is it still?
No, I would have to say. I think that the two games against Levante in a week, I think we all at least expected 4 out of 6 points. A draw away, we gave them... We rounded up that on the last podcast where we said, you know, it can be a tough place to go and play. And that you would have thought they would have taken notice from that. I thought they wasted half a game at the weekend on Saturday. I thought the first half was a drab affair. Levante scored. They had one other chance. And I thought Atletico, and they didn't show any urgency. And it was the first 15 minutes of the second half as well. I was watching the game, and the first time I saw any real attacking urgency was in this, just approaching 58 minutes. And I think the rest of the game they wasted. From then on in, you could make an argument that they were unfortunate. The goalkeeper, Dani Cardenas, had the game of his life. And he 28 shots by Atletico Madrid, 11 were on target. Most of those came in that last 30 minutes or so. And the goalkeeper was outstanding. There was a few chances where I thought Atletico were wasteful. Shots hit directly the goalkeeper, but he did make some other really good saves. But they can't afford to waste 58 minutes. You know, it's their play was predictable. And as I said, I think the clear thing for me was, and they didn't really liven up until that part of the game. And then for the last 30 minutes, they were unlucky not to get at least one goal. The 2-0 gives a different slant on the game, doesn't it? It was an onslaught in that last 30 minutes, to the extent that Oblak went up for the corner. I think he was pushed, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, it definitely.
Been held on to.
Yeah, I mean, my point is very, very much at the other end, he would have had a free kick for that as a goalkeeper in a penalty area.
Yeah.
But they just sort of didn't want to give it, did they?
No. I mean, how dramatic would that have been? You know, Levante scoring, De Frutos scoring from just over the halfway line. He cleared it from his own penalty box, had another touch to set himself up. An empty goal, but chose to shoot from long distance. It was good to see because he could have wasted time and just dribbling the ball until the referee blew the final whistle, but he had a go for goal himself and curled it in. But how dramatic would that have been if VAR had gone back, disallowed the goal, gone back and give the penalty and Atletico somehow sneaked a draw? So it was a dramatic end. But I think Atletico wasted, you know, I think there are reasons, though. I think that the changes lately, what we're seeing now is with the false changes. I mean, Trippier suspended has been is clearly a big loss to them. Carrasco was injured at for the game on Saturday. And a number of players that have been missing in recent weeks because of testing positive for COVID. So we warned that something like this could happen in this type of season. And Atletico have clearly been the worst hit team. Not just those challenging for the title, but throughout the season. I mean, Simeone has been tested positive. Costa was positive. Vasilico was... Santiago Arias was positive before he left the club. So, you know, on top of the six players that recently tested positive, to be coming back in dribs and drabs, it's unsettled them and their momentum has certainly been affected.
Paul Campbell basically asked the question. Paul's one of our Patreons, and I think it basically answered your question, I think, Paul. But he added, I'd say this is Atletico getting a taste of their own medicine. Levante doing an Atleti on Atleti, which hurts, he said.
I'm sure it does. Yeah. I think that Levante, to be fair, they try to get out on attack, don't they? And they always carried a little threat. And it was enough, you know, it was enough of a warning for Atletico to show respect, not to open up until the last 30 minutes or so of the game. Prior to that, I think Atletico, the three at the back, were Jimenez, Felipe, Hermoso, were you know, wary of the fact that Levante, you know, were capable of causing them problems on the counter-attack. I think Morales should have scored earlier on, shouldn't he, before the goal?
Yeah, yeah. So what about Chelsea then? So Tuesday, so podcasters will be listening to this a couple of hours before that game. It's unfortunate that, you know, talking about luck going against them is that they've got to play a game in Budapest, which was their home game, Atleti's home game. Yeah. So it's a weird one. I know the COVID situation trumps everything this season, so everything comes with a little bit of an asterisk, but it's harsh on them, isn't it, given that they've now basically got a difficult Champions League away game when they should have been at home.
It is, and the, you know, the, apart from the Levante game, of course, that I know there's no supporters in the stadium, but it's still a home fixture. Mm. You know, you're more familiar with the surroundings.
And less
no
travelling.
Mm. Exactly. So that is, you know, is going to hamper teams that are in this position in the Champions League this season. So it is a strange one. I think Jimenez picked up an injury in the game at the weekend as well, so he might be another player that's missing. Savic was missing at the weekend. So, you know, this was always liable to happen to teams during this season. And at the moment, Atletico Madrid are going through it with the positive COVID tests, the players that were injured, Trippier suspended. But I think I have a lot of faith in what Simeone does and what Atletico Madrid and the mentality of the players. And I just feel that something like this will refocus their minds on the job in hand. You know, their form hadn't been great in the previous three or four matches, but they've been sneaking wins. They got a draw against Celta Vigo. They were just nicking a win. They need to win it. Nicked it, but just about got the win against Granada. And perhaps it takes a defeat, you know, to refocus the mind. I think six or seven games, they haven't kept a clean sheet. So my prediction is a clean sheet against Chelsea, first and foremost. I think that's where they will go back to basics with the players that he has available. And I think they'll be working from the typical Atletico Madrid blueprint of making sure we don't concede. That's too many goals for them to concede. It's unlike them. So I fully expect them to be focusing on keeping a clean sheet and then hoping the likes of João Felix, Luis Suarez. I mean, just one sort of example of how much they're having to, Simeone is having to tinker with the team is Llorente is playing in a different position every game. And in some games, in two or three different positions in that 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think that you know, I would like to see from Atletico's point of view, and it's not been able, you know, Simeone hasn't been able to do that recently, but get back to a sort of a solid formation and maybe one or two players playing on a more regular basis. And I'd like to see perhaps Suarez with maybe João Felix and Llorente playing close to him. I think that would help Atletico in terms of going forward. Cells missing at the weekend, so they can have a good, solid block in midfield. And I think that's what they'll be looking to do against Chelsea, to be nice and solid at the back and then hope that one of their individual players as I said, the likes of Llorente, João Felix, Suarez. That's if he plays them. he might just be, you know, a more solid team, and Llorente playing in a more midfield role. But I think he has to be mindful that it is officially their home game.
But they have to try
and get a goal or two.
But having said that, in a way, you should defend in that nominal home game, shouldn't you, because of the away goals rule?
Definitely. I think that's why his focus will be on what makes us a good team is the fact we don't concede goals, which they're doing too much of that recently. And I think he then will trust the individuals that are, you know, as high up the pitch as possible. And we know Suarez will be there all the time. And then maybe, you know, as I said, João Felix, Llorente playing in deeper positions, but attacking, you know, still attacking and looking to get close. Llorente can do that because he's got the energy to get from a midfield position. When they're out of possession, he'll drop back into midfield. When they get the ball to Suarez, he can bust the gut, which he normally does, to get there and join up and support him. So, no, I think they have to be mindful of the fact they need to be to get the balance right between, you know, being a team that are hard to play against, again, don't concede goals, and have that one or two special players that can nick a goal or two.
So
I think it will refocus their attention on what makes them good.
Right. So Real Madrid are going to catch them or not is the question. So four wins in a row it is, isn't it? Without ever looking particularly convincing. I don't remember them playing well in any of those games. Casemiro header. He missed another, actually a better chance, hadn't he?
He had a couple.
And so they went to Valladolid. They won. So it's, you know, it's 3 points, isn't it?
Exactly.
What else do you want?
Yep, no, exactly. And they've put themselves back in the race because of the slips from Atletico. The Madrid derby is in a couple of weeks as well. And I think Zidane, under the circumstances, you joked about the 11 players, you know, it's 11 players that we know in Isco. That's it. There's nobody coming back for the Champions League match against Atalanta. So that's going to be tough for them as well. You joked about Hugo Duro, couldn't get a game at Cafe. He's relatively young, so he went on loan to Real Madrid Castilla. Has hit some form in terms of scoring goals for the B team and come off the bench at the weekend against Valladolid. So, you know, they are, it makes it all the more puzzling, doesn't it? That we, you know, Real Madrid have got Odegaard out on loan at Arsenal. Real Madrid, Gareth Bale at Spurs, who thankfully at the weekend showed some form and has done in the last week. I mean, he would have been introduced now, wouldn't he? And who else was it? Luka Jovic out on loan. Hence why Mariano Diaz is the replacement for Benzema, and then Hugo Duro coming off the bench to replace him with 20 minutes left. So it's that might come back to haunt them, actually, because Casemiro and Modric Kroos are playing every single minute, every game. And you would imagine at some stage that, you know, that's going to catch up with them, either in terms of loss of form, being stale, or maybe picking up an injury. But under the circumstances, Real Madrid have done fantastically well.
What do you make of Mariano, Terry?
Well, I've always liked him. I think given a chance, he will deliver for any team that he plays for. I think he's dynamic. He's aggressive enough. He's physically, you know, he fits the bill as a centre forward. And I think given the opportunity and having the faith of Zidane, I think he could, you know, I mean, Benzema is a loss because of his experience, his know-how, his link-up play, you know, the fact he's the predominantly the main goal scorer for Real Madrid. But I would like to have seen Mariano Diaz being given up more opportunities under Zidane than what he has. And let's not forget, he went to France, scored 20-odd goals in a season. That's why Real Madrid brought him back. Sevilla wanted to buy him. Real Madrid were desperate to get him back on the books, and he's never really had a chance. So, no, I think he can lead the line well for Real Madrid.
And then Atalanta. I mean, I've seen Atalanta. I've never really sat down and watched them in Serie A. I've seen them in the Champions League. And they're a hugely entertaining team, it would seem, which is refreshing, because I'm struggling a bit with a lot of teams at the moment this season, you know, just in terms of playing quite attritional, possession-based, but quite dull football, whereas Atalanta do seem to be a team that take a gamble, that they do throw lots of players forward, and it's, you know, it's entertaining. I can't offer much more than that. So it's an interesting challenge, isn't it, for Real Madrid? They've got to be strong, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think that La Liga in general needs a strong Real Madrid, doesn't it, in the Champions League, particularly this season.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tough tie for them. If you're at Atalanta, you're looking at maybe getting to the midfield three. You know, we know that they're playing every game. How, you know, sharp are they going to be? I mean, they're three quality players, but how sharp are they be? How often can you go to, you know, keep going every 3 or 4 days? Maybe they'll look to try and exploit the fact that Lucas Vazquez is going to be playing right back again, because that's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, Nacho playing alongside Varane, the experience is there from both of those players. But I think if Atalanta, I mean, this game is in Italy in their own stadium, isn't it? So they'll be helped by that fact. And I think that, you know, it's going to be a tough game for Real Madrid. You know, if Real Madrid had another 4 or 5 players fit, I would make them favourites. But it also hampers them if, you know, if the players are feeling jaded. Does Zidane want to try risk some of the young, unfamiliar names on the bench? Isco was the only senior player on the bench at the weekend. That'll be the same against Atalanta. It's going to be a tough fixture for Real Madrid in these circumstances, but I wouldn't bet against them getting a solid result.
You mentioned Nacho. See, his brother popped up, didn't he? And dealt a blow to Barcelona with the last... Well, actually, it wasn't the last game. It was the late penalty that Cadiz got an equaliser after a reckless challenge by Clément Longley. And as I say, Terry, every game we're talking about a Barcelona centre-back messing something up, aren't we? And different ones along the way. So Messi, with a penalty, put them in front. But... just couldn't get the job done, could they, against Cadiz? Despite, was it 81% of possession, which is ludicrous?
I'm just going to confirm that, yeah, 82 to 18%. Right, yeah. 885 passes against 198, and they only scored a penalty. I mean, that's 20 shots, 4 on target.
Yeah.
That's a clear sign of, you know, what went wrong. I look at that and I feel, it took them a while to break down Cadiz. They were playing one up front, and then a 4 and a 5 or a 5 and a 4. They kept alternating between those, a back 4 and a back 5 and a midfield 4 and a midfield 5. But it was 9-1. That was there. And we know that's what they do. They're entitled to do that. They're a newly promoted team with a small budget, and they're not going to go there and you know, be rolled over. They're having a tough time now in this season after having a bright start. So once, you know, Barcelona... once they got the goal, you kind of felt from Barcelona's point of view, they relaxed. Understandably, to a degree, but the first goal is crucial, isn't it? Against a team that are showing no ambition. And I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast before, it must be quite boring for Barcelona to never, ever get the chance to play on an empty half of the pitch. It doesn't happen. A lot of teams know if you get behind the ball and you frustrate Barcelona, they're, you know, you can hit them on the break when you get possession and get the ball forward quickly. So therefore, teams do retreat against Barcelona. We never get to see, you know, Dembele where he's out wide and he's got a clear run down the wing and, you know, just one fullback to beat and running from the halfway line. So Barcelona are used to playing against that type of defensive system. And I thought that once they got the first goal, which is crucial because then you know that at some stage Cadiz have got to come out and play. But Cadiz were willing to go right to the last 5-10 minutes of the game with the scoreline just at 1-0 and hope that if they get the ball in the box, something might happen. And in this case, it did. So you know, the fault from Barcelona was relaxing after they got the first goal, being sloppy in the final third. Poor decision-making, poor finishing. Poor decision-making in terms of sometimes a player shot when he should have passed. Sometimes the opposite where, you know, they passed and they should have shot and stuff like that. And I felt that, you know, it was an accident waiting to happen in the circumstances that we've seen from Barcelona. And I don't want to go over the top because they've been good in La Liga. Mentioned in the previous podcast, they've lost every big game they've played. Yeah. So they deserve, not criticism, but... that's how we gauge them at the moment.
Yeah, got to be honest. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when it was 1-0, there's an excellent waiting to happen. Hmm. And it did for Barcelona. So, you know, it was a terrible result because of Atletico losing. You know, Real Madrid got their win. It's put them back in the race. Sevilla have got a win. They're back in the race. You know, but it was so important for Barcelona to have got 3 points. Interestingly enough, I saw Koeman say that this hurt, the Cadiz result hurt more than the PSG one, because he probably feels that he probably expected the PSG one, to be honest. He's, you know, he knows football, he knows his players, he knows the level that they're at, and he knows the level that they're at is one that should be good enough to beat Cadiz, who got the worst defence in the league, despite having played nine there at the weekend. So great credit to Cadiz. I mean, they've beaten Barcelona and drawn with them this season, and they're another team that's done some damage to Barcelona's hopes of getting back into the title race. But we've got a title race again, that's for sure. But so, Barcelona, who have a lot more work to do than the other two now.
On Thursday night, we talked about the potential of foreign ownership, and we asked if our patrons had a view. Paul Cushley has sent in via the Patreon site. So patreon.com/LTEL. You've got to give us some money before you join in, and then you get some extra content and you get your views heard. So Paul says, so we were asking about the lack of external of foreign investment into Spanish clubs. And I basically posed the question, what do you want to come? So Paul gave us the detail down. So I would like to see moves to make all clubs fan-owned, even if it's just 51%. Fans could elect people to use their 51% to make decisions that reflect opinions if need be. I feel that more investment from outside clubs get, the less they seem to care about their fans and the communities, and they start to less resemble the people they represent and start representing their shareholders. I think that's right, isn't it? And yeah. I'd much rather stick by Barca, who brought me a lot of joy over the last 15, 20 years through a rough patch, with the hope that their history and style can attract players and youngsters to the club and not for the paycheck. I know they're all mercenaries, but the more blatant it is, the less I feel the love for the players and the clubs. So,
there's one big problem there.
Yeah.
Paul's a proper supporter.
Yeah.
Because other supporters don't feel the same. They want the here, they want the now, they want the new shiny objects that come with the best, you know, big name managers. They want new, you know, half a dozen big name signings every transfer window. They want the manager sacked if they go 3 or 4 games without a win. So that, unfortunately, that is the case for, I think, the majority of supporters now. You know, patience, you know, someone like Paul, I agree 100% with what Paul was saying. And I think that the clubs do lose their identity. And we're fortunate, I think, in La Liga in Spain, you know, the league that we do our podcast on, that there are a significant amount of teams still that have an identity.
Yeah.
Still. You know, whether it's the clubs in the Basque region or the clubs in the Andalusia region or, you know, in other parts of Spain. You can see, I think it's one of the really good things about this league is that you do that. It's why it annoys me when everyone thinks in the UK that every game in Spain is played in 80 degrees all year round. And it's not the case. We know that.
Definitely.
You know, we've seen it San Sebastian and in Galicia where Celta Vigo play. We often see it pouring down with rain and, you know, in the Basque Country, Eibar and stuff like that, that, you know, the weather isn't, you know, I've joked about, I don't know how Beckham had an all-year tan when he played for Real Madrid, because I've been there a number of times and I've been freezing cold there a number of times. If I did it, it's the coldest place I've ever been to watch a game of football. It's known as the Pneumonia Stadium. So clubs do have their identity still with the different regions intact as well. And, you know, Pamplona or Osasuna, they've got a great identity. So no, I think we're fortunate. I want that to continue. And I agree 100% with what Paul is saying. But unfortunately, you know, it's we have seen teams change the course of history with foreign owners coming in. And it would be hard for a Chelsea fan or a Manchester City fan, a PSG fan, to say that they don't enjoy the benefits of having wealthy owners. Seeing better players, getting the best managers in the world. It's a tough one. I totally agree with Paul.
Yeah, because you're taking a massive gamble, aren't we? We've seen Real Madrid, haven't we? The talk of this, there's a couple of different investment deal that we're talking about. One is Saudi Arabia, which doesn't seem to be enough money to me, the Saudi Arabia one. Talk about 130 million over 10 years, which is... Is that right? Have I got that figure right? So that's not a lot of money, is it? For, you know, that's...
Is this someone linked to the ladies' team?
Oh, I don't know.
I saw some sort of sponsorship for the ladies' team, which was, if it's 130 million over 10 years, that's a lot of money.
Yes, fair enough.
I'm sure some of it will find its way to supplementing this men's team as well.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, notoriously a strong supporter of women's sport in Saudi Arabia.
Exactly, yes. Yes. No, wholeheartedly getting behind women football again. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, no, so that's one of them. I mean, one of the candidates, is it Font of Barcelona, claiming that they can bring in outside investment to buy, as you said in the intro, Mbappe and Haaland, or both.
All those debts.
Forget that. We've got another 250 million here invested by someone. So that's just for buying players.
Yeah.
Not paying the current players the money they're owed, by the way.
Yeah.
Or clubs they've bought players from, by the way. I'm sure they all agree that if the club get that sort of investment, just go and buy two new players. That's fine. You still owe us money and you owe, you know, this club money and that club money. No, it's... football does have a tendency sometimes to eat itself, doesn't it?
Yes. And good way of putting it. Yes. Right, let's take a quick break for podcast listeners. Let's crack on with the rest of La Liga. Real Sociedad 4-0. That's all they need against Manchester United, isn't it, Terry? Take it to extra time. So there we are. easy done. 4-0 against Alaves. Isak got a hat trick. He'd scored six. He has now scored in six consecutive league games. So it's a good run, isn't it? Second highest scoring Swede in La Liga ever. 3-1 touch finishes. Porto got the last one, David Silva, a couple of assists. Everything good for Real Sociedad against Alaves, which they needed, didn't they, after Thursday?
They did. And it's actually a really good response, isn't it? And, you know, to pick themselves up after being, you know, thrashed against Manchester United. So for them to bounce back in style, you know, they've been in pretty good form in the league, helped by the fact that Isak is a young striker finding his way. And sometimes in your career, the penny drops. And I think that this is a case for him. I've always been an admirer since he's been at Real Sociedad. My concern was he lacked the striker's instincts. So his all-round play was particularly good. You know, he's got, in terms of all the attributes needed, he's got them all. I was just worried about that, you know, goal-scoring instincts. 3-1 touch finishes shows to me, and a run of six consecutive games of scoring, that the penny has dropped, which is not unusual for a player of his age to learn. You know, it's how it should be. That if he gets himself on the end of some of the really good attacking play that Real Sociedad provide, particularly David Silva, of course, and the other players in attack, that's where the team is the strongest, then his job is to become almost like a Luis Suarez for Atletico, where you are the finisher. And that's what he's proving to be at the moment. Took all three really well as well. But that is an important, really important aspect of a striker, you know, that you do have the ability to finish with one touch, because that's how the majority of your goals are going to be scored. So, you know, we talk about getting the end of crosses, getting the end of through passes. And if you've got that ability to finish as smartly as he's doing at the moment with a one-touch finish, it will hold him in good stead. And he has every chance of going on to be a top centre forward.
I didn't ask you about Sevilla's performance. And as we've delayed the podcast in order to do that, we should do, shouldn't we? Solid win, wasn't it, against Osasuna?
Yeah, and it makes the performance against Dortmund look even more remarkable, because I think it's six on the trot now for Sevilla, so they're firmly back in the race. I mean, they're 7 points behind. They've implied the same amount of games of Atletico Madrid, Sevilla, Barcelona at the weekend. So, you know, that's going to go a long way to deciding which of the two contenders can make a push. It's still not out of the question that Barcelona could go on a, you know, they're on a decent run. That was their first points they've dropped for a while. at the weekend against Cadiz. So if they bounce back, tough fixture though against Sevilla, who they play again in the Copa del Rey as well. So I think that's next week as well, if I'm not wrong. I think that Sevilla play Barcelona in two consecutive games. But Sevilla, so for them to be sort of almost duffed up against Dortmund, Diego Carlos, the midfield. I looked at the midfield in the game tonight, showing Jordan and Fernando were immaculate in midfield. You know, every single aspect of midfield play, they were good at distribution, defensively. They were aggressive. They were strong. Really showed their quality, which was surprising when you look at how they weren't able to do that against Dortmund and how Diego Carlos struggled against Haaland in the Dortmund and Koundé in the Dortmund game. I won't write Sevilla off getting something against Dortmund, though. I must admit.
Yeah.
I looked at the form of Dortmund. They're sixth in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
That performance was slightly out of context for the rest of their season. And I do wonder if, you know, Sevilla, with their pedigree in European football, will believe they can steal that. So maybe that, you know, late goal they got, the second one, from De Jong in the first leg, might just get 3-1, no chance. 3-2 down, yeah, I think there's a chance. And I think what we saw, Sevilla against Osasuna, fantastic squad and a solid performance. And, you know, you just don't see them slipping up in La Liga at the moment. And, you know, they're, you know, after a slow start to the season, I think they're the informed team in La Liga, no doubt. I know Real Madrid are on a good run of form, but Sevilla's form, I think, surpasses Real Madrid's at the moment in La Liga.
Say something new about Villarreal, Terry, would you?
Disappointing.
Yeah.
But actually, first and foremost, that was a terrific game of football.
Yeah.
Loved the conditions. It was raining. It was slick. Both teams played really well. It was a really tight, contested game. Villarreal don't have enough shots on goal. Mm. You know, the possession was shared. You know, the passes, when you look at the passes, very similar in terms of stats on the passing. But Athletic had 18 shots, 8 on target. So, Villarreal had 3 shots, 2 on target.
Yeah.
So I think that tells you that they have a lot of play without an end product.
And the players, when you look at the team, you think, oh, that's quite an attacking team. But they're on a leash in some way, aren't they? They're frustrating, aren't they?
They are, and I think it is a problem. I mean, the league form is, you know, they rely a lot on Gerard Moreno. I don't know if he's 14th goal, and he's missed a few games this season. Paco Alcacer, you would imagine the pair of those linking up should be enough to give you an end product. Yeah, you're right. I look at the midfield and the wide players and the subs they put on. It does seem, you know, a little bit of a mystery as to why they are not able to turn the really good possession into more attempts on goal, first and foremost. That's the main thing. So to have 3 shots when they play, I thought they played really well. Terrific goal. Pedraza with a lovely run, weaving his way into the penalty area, the ball getting cleared, and Moreno flashing home from relatively long range. Berenguer bundled one home. He's become the top scorer for Athletic,
yeah.
6 goals, which is unusual. He's a wide player that's not been a regular since joining. It's a difficult one to put your finger on with Villarreal. With Sevilla, when they struggle to score, I often think they don't get the ball in the box enough. They don't get enough players into the box. Villarreal do, but somehow they're not getting an end product. So, you know, maybe something Unai Emery, obviously working with the players, will know a lot more than I do about the issues. Lack of conviction, maybe. Do the fullbacks push forward as much as they have done in the past? I'm not so sure, but, you know, I thought, you know, and I must say, I thought it was a really, really good game to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're enjoyable, Athletic. I know I've said this before, and at Marcelino, yeah. But they've livened up, haven't they? And
totally.
Yeah. Right, I think, no, let's just quickly do Valencia versus Celta. So, pivotal moment was the goalkeeper getting sent off for Celta. And then it was 94, 98, I think, the Valencia goals.
Yeah, so it wasn't so pivotal because Valencia made hard work of it. 2 subs came on it to score goals. And as you say, the 94th, 98th minute, they sure took a while. It was tough on Celta to go down to 10 men with after 64 minutes and to get that close to holding on for a draw. They had one or two moments themselves. where they nearly, you know, sneaked a goal and with the few attacks that they had. But a massive result for Valencia. If you look at the league table, it tells you how important that result was for Valencia, because, you know, it takes them up the table now. They're 27 points, 6 points away from the relegation battle. So they, you know, a much needed win for Valencia. Show good spirit, which they have done all season. And, you know, I think it's a question of Javi Gracia just finding the right formula up front, the right partner with Maxi Gomez. The two subs came on. Kang In Lee played one of his best games I've seen him play for Valencia. I think they realised how much, you know, they needed that win against the Celta team. They've been pretty informed lately. So, a really big win. You could tell by the reaction of the players when they scored the goal. Vallejo with the first one, as you said, and Gamero with a fine finish for the second. And it was like this, you know, it was an end of season match where they'd survived relegation. So they knew what pressure they and the manager are under at the moment.
Right. And let's then stick a blanket over the rest of the relegation battle then. So we've mentioned already Cadiz got a very useful draw away to Barcelona. Valladolid beaten by Real Madrid. But the other teams at the bottom, so a massive win for Huesca. Yeah. Who are looking like they've got a good chance of surviving, haven't they? So 3-2 against Granada. Still bottom, though. Elche won as well. So everything I said about Fran Escobar, I'm an idiot. He's a genius. Won Danny Calvo, thumping header against Eibar. And whether it's the end of the line for Bordalas, we're not quite sure whether it's now or later. But Getafe beaten again away to Betis. And you warned Terry a few weeks ago, didn't you, that they were in real danger if they didn't react to being in a relegation battle that they weren't quite ready for.
Yeah, it does look like the president is going to react with the news that it does appear imminent now that Bordalas is going to be leaving. But there's three stories. He's going to leave now, he's going to leave after the next game, and he may be leaving at the end of the season by, you know, a mutual agreement. So the favourite to replace him is Michel, which is a huge difference in style, yeah. I have to say. So that's a risk. Personally, I think I'd stick with Bordalas for this season to get them, you know, to make sure that they stay up rather than make the change and hope, fingers crossed, that a new manager with a completely different style of play comes in and makes a difference. So I think that Getafe, they did have a shot on target in this game. Remember I said to you in the last podcast, they've gone four without a shot on target. Yeah. They had one on target in this match. So not really pushing it by any stretch of the imagination. Betis, I think, deserved to win that. It was a close game. Missed penalty from Canales. Then they get another penalty and Borja Iglesias gets the winner for that one. But Getafe in the relegation battle, that's for sure. Elche, 16 even since a win. And he takes over and gets the win against another team in big trouble in Eibar. I think they've won two in the last 14, one in the last seven. Eibar, the second lowest scorers in the league. Getafe, 17. Eibar, 19. And that's a little bit of a surprise, actually. When, you know, Eibar do have these runs in the season where they don't, you know, might like haven't won in the last seven. But when you look further back, it's just two wins in the last 14. So it's a long period of poor results from Eibar. So they're in trouble. And Alaves on the back of the 4-0 defeat at Real Sociedad. Abelardo hasn't had as much impact as he would have liked in terms of that new manager bounce. So I think, you know, I know Osasuna got the same points as Cadiz, but I think Osasuna are going to have enough. I mean, Valencia and Celta Vigo now are on the march into a position of safety. So I think from Cadiz down, I think any of those teams can go this season. Slightly surprised, we're talking about Valladolid losing to Real Madrid, but they're finding wins hard to come by. Although I thought their form against Real Madrid was the best it's been for a while. They just didn't take their chances, particularly when they had good spells in the game and were clearly on top. So I think that the Elche win in particular is a massive win because of who they got their win against. Huesca, slightly fortunate this week, I have to be honest, because they played a weakened Granada team. Diego Martinez choosing to rest a whole load of players between the two Napoli games. Understandable. I mean, Granada in a healthy position in the league, as you can see there. and they're having the time of their life in European football. And with a great result in the first league, there's, you know, every reason you can understand why he chose the best players for the game coming up. So that helped Huesca. But it was good to see Huesca get amongst the goals. And Pacheta, he's certainly made a difference since he's got in. They look more vibrant, they look more upbeat, and they look capable of scoring goals now. So that was a massively important win for them as well.
Yep. So Huesca are 20th. They're only 3 points behind Alaves, who are 16th, who are only 3 points behind Osasuna, who are 13th. So that's how close it is down the bottom end. Now, I promised Terry that we would tell you these teams. So Tapiwa got, while he was listening to it, he came up with this team. So this is just off the top of his head. So the under 21 team, he couldn't think of a goalkeeper. He mentions Fernandez and Simon, but they're over 21. Right back, Serginho Dest. Centre back, Guillamon. Araujo. Left back, couldn't think of a left back, so he says Playman Gazer out of position. Right, then he's got Brian Hill and Sanset and Yunus Musa in midfield. Pedri, Isak, João Felix. Not bad, is it? Over 33, he's got him in a 4-4-2. Claudio Bravo, Jesus Navas, Sergio Ramos, Piqué, or Albiol. left back, Monreal. Centre back, Mikel Rico, Luka Modric. Right midfield, Joaquin. Left midfield, David Silva, Luis Suarez, Alvaro Negredo. Now, that's a pretty good team for the top of his head. As Kelvin sent us one in, so there were one or two absences from Tapiwa's team. So the under-21s, he's got Lunin in goal. Of course, we haven't seen much of him in truth. Dest at right back, Araujo. Mingueza, the other centre back. Manu Sanchez as the highly rated young left back. Pedri, Yunus Musa, everyone likes him. Rodrigo, Brian Hill, everyone likes him. Fatty, of course, assuming you know he's fit for the purposes of this, and João Felix. So is that team winning or is this team winning? Claudio Bravo, Jesus Navas, Albiol Ramos, Nacho Monreal, Joaquin, Luka Modric. Oh, yeah, he's got in the midfield. Morales, of course, Suarez, Karim Benzema. I've got 33. You forget Karim Benzema's 33. I forget he's 33. So who's winning? Are the old guys? Because that was my
Messi was in one of those teams.
How old is Messi? Hang on. He's 33, isn't he?
33, yeah.
Yeah. So has he turned 33 since we?
Yeah, 34 next birthday.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Right.
I would say the senior team needs to get a healthy lead. Because and then not hang on to it but use their game management from change from thousands of games of experience to hold on to a potential lead before those young guns come on strong towards the end.
How would you play with that team? Because we were talking about the Spanish teams getting done on counters by, I know, by Haaland and by Mbappe, but you know, by the exceptional, really good European teams who are really good on the break. The Spanish teams have struggled against them. So if you had a team that age, what would you do?
If you were the young ones?
The old ones, if you were the old ones.
I wouldn't go with the closing down up front.
No, yeah.
Let them have the ball, drop off, let them have it in their own half, and then try and win possession back from there, then break from there.
Right.
I think if you start asking Suarez and Jorge Molina to start closing down hard the pitch and then the midfield players to back them up, if 11 players doing that at that age, I don't think they could maintain that. So I think that's what they would rather do. And I think that the older centre-backs would like that to, you know, they'd drop off as well. So you probably see them dropping off to the halfway line and let them have possession in the other half of the pitch and then try and pick them off when you get the ball back. I think I'd be surprised if they started with the three strikers chasing around like lunatics, the midfield players pushing in, and then the centre half pushing up to the halfway line trying to play offside. I don't think the nature of the senior players that I played alongside will be to drop off and let the kids have it, let them have 20 passes and not go anywhere, and then pick them off at the right time, win the ball back, and then play from there. Whereas the young ones, it would be fantastic. We see these regional games, don't we? Where I've always been surprised that clubs allow their players to go off and play.
Yeah.
Normally in a regular season, there's a Christmas fixture. You know, Catalans against the Basques, and they get caps and they get called up, and it's in Wikipedia as players having a cap for the Basque country and a cap for the Catalonia. Managers are, you know, it's a big honour for them to be managed. And I always wonder, why do the clubs allow these expensive players to go off and play? It's a tradition. That's why.
And identity. In England. Identity and character.
Exactly. Can you imagine that in England?
No.
In the Premier League at Christmas, a whole range of fixtures between, you know, the Midlands playing the North East and the North West playing London. You know, and players going off and playing and clubs going, you know, giving them their permission to go off and play in this friendly, and the pride that takes place with these players playing for.
I think you'd struggle to get a team out. I don't think you get a team out of Premier League players from the North East of England. I genuinely don't think you'd get
Newcastle would be 11.
Yeah, I don't think there are 11. Look at the Newcastle team. There's, you know, I can't think of 11 Geordies in that team. The Longstaff brothers and where's Dummett from? But yeah, you know, not. I don't think there's. Maybe I'm wrong again. So if I'm wrong, if you can think of a team of 11, I mean, I know Middlesbrough have got a few. So
Middlesbrough.
But I think there is I think, you know, we talk about a lack of identity. We worry about a lack of identity of Spanish teams there, but they've still got it compared to the Premier League, certainly, which is distinctly lacking in identity. Anyway, that's all matters for another day. So enjoy your football this week. Obviously, Champions League, Atleti, Chelsea on Tuesday, Atalanta, Real Madrid. Also, bonus La Liga game, by the way, I think, isn't there? Barca, Elche, 6 o'clock Wednesday.
Yes, there is.
And then we'll see a little bit of pride in the Europa League. Obviously, wins for Granada and Villarreal. So we will be back for
Some good games. Yeah, some good games next week, John.
Yes,
in La
there
Liga
are.
As well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Obviously, Sevilla.
All seem to match up next week. One of those weeks where teams in the relegation battle were playing each other. Top of the table were playing each other.
Yeah,
Real Madrid, Real Sociedad is the Monday night game.
Yeah, so we'll be back next Tuesday, I guess, doing this, or maybe late Monday night again, for the Patreon. So huge game, and I think Valencia, Getafe. So if that's the end of the line for Bordalas, that angsty game that we've got used to in the last few seasons could be an interesting way for him to go out.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. So plenty to look forward to, and we'll see you. So we'll see the Patreons later in the week for a European special. And we'll be back with another podcast this time next week. See you then.